Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Hungry Planet when we come back. You know, during World War II, our parents and grandparents planted victory gardens and helped to provide for their own food and fiber for themselves and for their country. Now, today, over half the food that we eat is imported from outside of our borders. Our food is produced from hybrid seed that will not reproduce, and it is nutritionally deficient. Adolf Steinbrum of Fairbanks, Iowa, put the matter into perspective by having samples of corn tested for nutrients that are usually added to commercial feeds. And compared to more than 4,000 samples of hybrid corn tested in 10 Midwest states in a recent year, Steinbrum's open pollinated corn contained 75% more crude protein, 875% more copper, 345% more iron, and 205% more manganese. And the same result has been seen in the content of calcium, sodium, magnesium, and zinc. Now, in the opinion of many ecologic farmers, hybrid seed merely masks poor farming practices by producing bins and bushels of foodless food without the nutrients that are really food's reason for being in the first place. Now, if you'd like to know more about this multinational corporate monopoly of our seed and food supplies and how you can become independent from them, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package first? That's the place to start. That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational. It's informative. It's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, and click on to the archives page and send us, just download it right there. You can get on to the georgegordon.org webpage and then go to the archives page. You can just download it right there. All right, Hungry Planet. This new book called Hungry Planet is written by a fellow named Peter Menzel and Faith D'Aluzio. Peter Menzel and Faith D'Aluzio, Hungry Planet, an unusual book. Easy to read. It has 30 stories in it. 30. And it's the story of 30 families in about 25 countries around the world and what they eat every week and how much they spend on it. There's one example in here where they spend 8 cents per meal during the week for each one of 15 members of the family. Now, that's 8 cents per meal in one of those countries where people earn $2 a day. Then there's an example in here of $5.95 a meal. That's the most expensive. That's in Germany. And I want to point out that this is not the average of Germany, or this is not the average of Mali. What it is 30 families, none of them are starving to death. There's nothing in here about famine. And these people, and then these 30 families, they're all well-fed. They are typical of the families living in those countries. They're just people. And the authors just walked up to them and said, hey, we'd like to measure what you eat every week. We want to see how many people you've got in your family. What is it that you eat? What are you buying? What is it that these people buy in Mexico City, a Hispanic family in Mexico City, family of about 8 people. And what is it that they buy? And surprisingly, 12 2-liter bottles of Coca-Cola is a part of their weekly diet. It's not a diatribe about organic food. The word organic does appear in here a few times, and there's a couple of people who are nutritionists, and they point out that the people who are eating this food are not necessarily always buying the best food. That sometimes the food that they're buying is something less than to be desired. Talks a little bit about obesity and why it is that in some countries you find higher obesity levels than others. But the general theme of the book is Dinner for 6 Billion in the foreword. Dinner for 6 Billion. And what is it that people eat around the world in different cultures, and the impacts of such things as KFC and McDonald's, as an illustration. But it's not a railing diatribe against McDonald's or KFC or anybody else, but rather an analysis of what these people are eating and how much it costs them to do that. What does it cost to feed a family of 8 in Ecuador? What does it cost to feed a family of 4 in France? Not that it's necessarily typical of the average French family, but just a family, people that are working, they're not unemployed, people that are well-fed, they're not starving to death. And it's revelatory in that over the years I have mentioned to you that there are people in the world that live on $2 a day. $2 a day. Now, how do you feed your family on $2 a day or $5 a day and so on? You know, here in the States, you couldn't buy a Big Mac for $2, I don't think. Now, what would you do if you had 5 or 6 children, like the 9 people in Ecuador, who feed 9 people on 38 cents per meal per day, spend $31.55 a week, $3.50 per week per person, and feed those 9 people? Well, they're all in good health, their teeth aren't rotting out, they're not hungry. How do they do that? My wife told me one day, she said, I can feed you a good, healthy, nutritious diet on 25 cents a serving. And I said, now that's something to behold. She has a number of recipes in which she can feed people for under $1 a day. That's my wife. She could feed you for under $1 a day a good, healthy, nutritious diet. Oh, you're not going to be eating filet mignon bacon wrapped now. I'm not offering that to you. But the Mormons, for instance, have been storing food for years and years and advocating that to their members. And the main source of their food supply is grains. And come to find out, they've got their heads on straight, because in Mali, the family that is being fed for 8 cents a day is doing that primarily on grains. And that's a country where they make $2 a day. And on $2 a day, can you feed a family of 15? And the answer is, yeah, you can. So the moral to the story here as we progress along is going to be to show you how to do that. You can spend as much as $5.95 per meal if you so desire, or as little as 8 cents per meal. And the pages and the pictures are right here. I mean, they've got everything lined out, and I'm going to give you some examples as we progress along. It's so detailed that it gets down to how much cooking oil is in the diet for the week, how much Coca-Cola, how many Big Macs, and what size drinks you have with your Big Macs as you're eating. So whether you're eating out, which is a part of your weekly food bill, or you're eating in, whether you're having Domino's pizza, or whether you're buying your pizza at the supermarket and cooking it in your own oven, every detail of every dollar of every one of these families, 30 families from around the world in about 25 countries, is revealed. And it is very instructive, especially as we head into what I contend is going to be a period called the Great Tribulation, and I think the world's greatest famine. Famine. A famine so great that in Bible prophecy it talks about 1/4 of the number of people on the planet, about 6 billion, that's 1.5 billion people, die from lack of food. Now, here, at this moment in time, dinner for 6 billion, there is some famine on the planet, and there are some people starving to death. There's no two ways about that. But the population is growing by about 100 million people a year, and about 20 million people a year are starving to death. So there's at least a net gain of 80 million. We haven't reached any tipping point yet. But the signs are there. And I think that this book called Hungry Planet is going to be a big help to all of you in making preparations for what it is that we need to do and ideas about how we can feed our families for, in one case here, 19 cents a day, 13 cents a day, excuse me, per meal. 19 cents per meal, 13 cents a meal, 45 cents, 67 cents, 38 cents, 29 cents, 40 cents, 46 cents, or 8 cents per meal. 36% of these families feed their families on less than a dollar a meal. Less than a dollar a meal per person. I think that is phenomenal. It's not an exception. It's not a starvation diet. It's you can have just as much to eat in San Francisco, California, as the guy does in, let's say, Bhutan, Chad, or China, or Guatemala, or Mexico City, or Mongolia, or in the Philippines. They're not starving to death, but you can't have the diet that you're ordinarily used to eating. That's a fact. But that doesn't mean you have to starve to death either. Well, now, every now and then you come across a book that is so fresh, so original, and so perspective that even someone like me, who has researched the subject for years, is surprised all over again by how the study of food can say so much about the human condition. And this is one such book. In creating Hungry Planet, What the World Eats, Peter Menzel did something deceptively simple and totally brilliant. They photographed families around the world posed with a display of all of the foods that they eat in one entire week. The result is not only a set of wonderful family portraits, but also a stunning commentary on some of the most critical issues facing the world today. The photographs have much to tell about how people from different countries, different cultures, and levels of society, how do they feed their families, and the reasons for the similarities and the differences. The particular foods purchased or acquired by each family reflect cultural traditions, of course, but they also demonstrate how diet, nutrition, and health depend on less controllable matters, such as poverty, conflict, and globalization. Although the photographs are cross-sections, one family in one place in one country at one moment in time, they cannot help but represent the larger issues that affect all of us. Everyone eats, and people around the world differ in many ways. But dinner unites us all, and throughout history, we humans have always found nourishing ways to use whatever foods we could get our hands on. Now, our earliest diets were hunted and gathered from the foods that were available as a result of geography and climate. But as soon as people figured out how to trade food, they did. Resourceful cooks turned the foods at hand into widely varying diets. Some are very unique, delicious as to merit the status of cuisines. Beyond that, human survival is proof that just about any diet is sufficiently nutritious to support growth and reproduction. Whether a diet promotes optimal adult health is another matter. For the best health and longevity, you need a variety of foods to be available, affordable, and adequately palatable. Well, as the Hungry Planet photographs show, the current diets of most world populations have moved well beyond hunting and gathering. They have evolved in response to changes in food production that began with the Industrial Revolution more than 200 years ago. New means of preservation allow foods to be eaten long after they've been grown and harvested, hence ketchup. New means of transportation, railroads, trucks, and airplanes, as well as technologies such as refrigeration, mean that foods grown in one place can be consumed fresh many thousands of miles away. Thus, even in some place as remote as Bhutan, Namgye and Nelem have a few oranges. Surely, grown well beyond the Himalaya Valley in which they live. New processing techniques allow companies to make shelf-stable food products that can be transported and consumed much later, like pasta in Greenland. New technologies have permitted the development of previously unknown food products like instant coffee and Cheese Whiz. New marketing methods can create worldwide demand for such products as Coca-Cola. Re-industrialized countries, food products have become increasingly independent of geography, climate, or season. Participants in global food economies now expect fresh fruits and vegetables to be available year-round, at relatively low cost on top of it. As developing economies improve, people have more money to spend and they can buy more foods for convenience rather than from necessity. Now you can see the rising expectations and choices that they inspire in the foods that are bought by many of the newly prosperous families pictured here. The photographs reflect another hugely important historical phenomenon. Until very recently, the most serious problem related to food was getting enough to eat, and starvation was the most serious health consequence. Famines occurred regularly as a consequence of natural disasters or human conflict, and large numbers of people suffered from malnutrition. Even today, insufficient food is a daily torment for nearly a billion people on planet Earth. Half of them are young children. This lack is especially disturbing because the world produces far more than enough food for everyone. It is just not distributed equitably. Look, for example, at the rations of the Sudanese refugees in Chad and the conditions under which their meager meals must be prepared. Political conflict is the cause of these particular inequities. But you can also see the graphic depictions of the effects of poverty on other families who live where food is scarce. But the photographs have even more to tell us. As conflicts resolve and people in developing countries become better off, they acquire more stable resources and change the way they eat. They inevitably replace the grains and beans in their diets with foods obtained from animal sources. They buy more meat. They buy more sweet foods. And they buy more processed foods. They eat more meals prepared by others. And soon they eat more food in general. They start gaining weight. Then they become overweight. And then they develop heart disease, diabetes, and other chronic diseases that are so common in industrialized society. Here we have the great irony of modern nutrition. At a time when hundreds of millions of people do not have enough to eat, hundreds of millions of other people are eating too much, then they are overweight or obese. Today, except in the very poorest countries, more people are overweight than underweight. Some socially conscious governments struggling to feed their hungry populations must also contend with the health problems of people who eat too much food. The phenomenon of going from not having enough food to overeating is now so common that it has been given its own name. It's called the nutrition transition. To see the nutrition transition in action, you need only compare the diets of families from Mali, Mongolia, and the Philippines with those diets in France, Australia, and the United States. Rates of obesity are rising rapidly in all countries, but they are the highest in the most industrialized countries. And to understand why, just examine the shopping lists and the food on display. As someone whose work links the study of food to nutrition and public health, I view these photographs through my own lens. My lens focused on the ways in which food marketing affects dietary choices. In today's fiercely competitive financial environment, food companies are required to expand sales and to demonstrate growth every quarter. Obesity and its health consequences are just collateral damage. Growth-seeking companies cannot imagine a better place to find new buyers than the emerging economies of developing nations. That is why China, with its more than 1 billion people, is of such intense interest to the makers of food products and fast food. Compare the diets of the two Chinese families in the book, one urban and the other rural. Both families are prospering. Both families have enough food. Both families are in transition from a diet of poverty to one of affluence. Now, the rural family has just started down this road. The foods that they are eating are mostly grains, vegetables, and fruits, along with relatively small amounts of meat. The foods on display in the family portrait are mostly raw or minimally processed, and you can easily imagine how they might be cooked in your favorite Chinese dishes. This rural family buys cubes of chicken stock as a luxury. Others are beer, cigarettes, and, as is common nearly everywhere, Coca-Cola. In contrast, the urban family can afford and has access to a great many more foods of different kinds. And that family buys many of the same basic foods as the rural family, but they add items that go well beyond the traditional Chinese, such as baguettes, sugar-free gum, Haagen-Dazs vanilla almond ice cream, and takeout from KFC, such as the global food market in the early 21st century. Now, nutritionist that I am, I celebrate the increasing prosperity that removes the threat of starvation, and I hold on to the hope that global marketing will not destroy either the joys of traditional cuisines or the health of the people experiencing this nutritional transition. But when I look at the Greenland photographs, I cannot help but wonder about the new food traditions of this family. Do they use the ketchup to season walrus or polar bear meat? How do Pringles fit into their traditional diet? And how do we interpret the effects of global food marketing when we encounter cigarettes among the purchases of families in Japan, Mongolia, and the Philippines or Turkey? Hungry Planet raises such questions and more. It is a gorgeous book, but also a rich and thoughtful commentary on today's human condition. Peter Menzel and Faith DiLucio have given us a feast for the eye, a feast for the heart, and a feast for the mind, and we're privileged to have them among us. Now, dinner is served. When we take a look at the countries in which the dinner is being served: Australia, Bhutan, China, India, Kuwait, Chad, Mali, Egypt, Turkey, Bosnia, Italy, France, Poland, Germany, Great Britain, and Greenland, the United States, Mexico, Guatemala, Cuba, and Ecuador. And we take a look at what these people all have in common. And most of them have Coca-Cola in common, if you can believe it, a worldwide product. Nearly everybody in the pages of this book is drinking some Coca-Cola. Now, not all of them. There are some countries that these people aren't. But most of them, especially the industrialized countries, they certainly are. The very first story is in the outback. It's the Browns of Riverview in the outback of Australia. They're an Aborigine family, one of the native inhabitants of Australia. They've been assimilated into the Australian society, into the Australian population. And their story goes something like this. They eat grains and other starchy foods, dairy, meat, fish, and eggs, fruits, vegetables, and nuts, condiments, beverages, fast food, prepared food, snacks, and desserts, just like all the rest of us. And they spend $376.45 a week, measured in U.S. dollars, on food. It's a family of 2, 4, 6, 7, family of 7. A man and his wife. Looks like they've got a grandmother there, and 1, 2, 3, 4 children. Family of 7. And they start off here. Although the country had no sheep until the late 18th century, when European settlers began to import and raise them in large numbers, many of Australia's original inhabitants came to embrace the shepherd's life. Sheep slaughtering is a common chore for people living in the outback, Australia's vast, desolate interior. And Vanessa Stanton learned it from her parents. Vanessa's grandfather, Sened's great-grandfather, was the shearer's cook at a sheep station in the outback known as Guduga in the Australian state of New South Wales. And Vanessa's mother, Marge Brown, says, "Living in the outback is as much a part of me as breathing." As did many young girls in the outback, Marge went to work on a sheep station when she was 13. "I was milking the cows, getting the horses for riders, mustering sheep, killing some for us to eat." And she says, "Girls who did this work were called jaliroos. Boys were called jackaroos. It was tough work, but she didn't think of it that way because everyone around her was doing it too." At age 16, Marge decided to study nursing, and when she graduated, she practiced her chosen profession in the outback. So how does she compare her childhood to her grandparents or to her grandchildren? "Well, my grandchildren have it easy today," she says, but she voices her complaint with a smile that lights up her face, despite the ravages of illness, and makes her grandchildren laugh. Doug Brown met Marge through a mutual friend. He didn't know she was the daughter of a shearer's cook who picked him up every day and took him to work until his friends, he calls them mates, pointed it out after he hung her photograph on the sheared shed wall. They soon married. Marge worked as a nurse in an outback clinic, while Doug continued to work as a shearer and played in a band on the weekends. And like their parents before them, the Browns raised their children, and many foster children, on yet another sheep station. This one out in the outback, also upriver from Guduga, with no running water or electricity. "We cooked on an open fire and we washed our clothes in a 44-gallon drum," says Marge. "They had a refrigerator that ran on kerosene sometimes." Now, let me take a look here at the diet itself, the amount of food that these people eat, and what it is that they eat. If you got a pen and paper, maybe you'd like to write this down. Grains and other starchy foods. They buy Colobin variety potatoes, 8.8 pounds, with white bread sliced, 4 loaves. Whole wheat bread sliced, 2 loaves. Wheat Bix breakfast cereal, 2.7 pounds. White Wings self-rising flour, 2.7 pounds. Basmati rice, 2.2 pounds. Kellogg's brand cereal, 1.9 pounds. Nanda spaghetti, 1.1 pound. Nanda spirals, 1.1 pound. White pocket bread, pita, 13 ounce. And Kellogg's cornflakes, 10.9 ounces. That's the grains and other starchy foods. And they spent $28.79 on it. Dairy, they spent $24.55. They bought Sunshine whole milk, 2.4 gallons, home brand vanilla ice cream, 1.1 gallons, home brand thickened cream, 1.3 quarts, margarine, 2.2 pounds, Yoplait yogurt, non-fat, 1.5 pounds, Yoplait yogurt, drinkable yogurt, 1.2 pounds, Kraft cheese singles, 1.1 pound. In other words, as you go through here, it identifies the food that they're buying right down to how many pounds and ounces that they're buying and the price for each one. And then they have a photograph here. They've got all the food. They evidently went out to the store, put it on the table, and set it around. All the people are sitting there at the table or standing behind it. They've got about a 2 gallon or maybe 3 gallon jug of water here. There's two of them piled up there. And it includes cigarettes. You know, these people spend so much, you know, on cigarettes. And they spend so much on things like snacks and desserts, prepared foods, fast foods. The fast foods include such things as McDonald's, 6 Happy Meals, 3 hamburgers, Coca-Cola, 6 small and 1 large. On the beverages here, boy, this is a long list. $37.92 a week they spend on beverages, such as they spent spring water, 7.9 gallons, Diet Coca-Cola, 1.6 gallons, fruit drink, 1.1 gallons, Just Juice orange drink, 2.5 quarts. Diet Sprite, 2.1 quarts. Golden Circle apple juice, 2.1 quarts. Golden Circle lime cordial, 2.1 quarts. Golden Circle orange and mango crush. 175 tea bags. This number is not a typo. Bushell's coffee, 1.8 ounce. 175 tea bags. They drink a lot of tea. Lemonade, 1.3 quarts. Sun-kissed orange drink, 1.3 quarts. Coca-Cola, 20.3 fluid ounces. Didn't buy very much Coke. Miscellaneous, $64.07. Long Beach cigarettes, 10 packs. Winfield tobacco, 1.8 ounces. Lion cigarette papers, 4 packs. Food expense for the week, $376.45. Now that breaks out to $53.77 per person per week, or $2.56 per meal. There's 21 meals in a week. We'll give them 3 meals a day, 7 days in a week, 21 meals. It cost them $2.56 every time somebody sat down to eat. That's not super expensive. That's about typical in the industrialized countries. There are places where they spend a little more and others where they spend a little less. But that'll give you an idea of a typical family. And you can see the pictures of what it is these people are eating. As long as the world goes on the way it is right now, these people don't have a problem in the world. Life goes on. But in the event of a major famine caused by war or by some kind of a physical upset, you know, something like this oil well going off in the Gulf of Mexico that upsets the food supply, For instance, one third of all of the fish, shrimp, crabs, oysters, and etc. that we eat in the United States, one third. Guess where it comes from? You guessed it. They're in the Gulf of Mexico. Now, I didn't know that until this oil well went off, but now that fishing is shut down. Now, this is a major calamity. It doesn't happen every day of the week, but it has happened. It's happened before, and it's in the process of happening now. That one-third of the shellfish, or one-third of the fish here in America, isn't going to spell famine in the world overnight. But it's just one more step in the wrong direction. One more event that's putting one more straw on the camel's back. And our objective here is to take a look at food on a hungry planet and work out the solution. Well, stand by. I've got to give you a report here. This is the halfway point in the program. Let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click on to the archives page and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Again, georgegordon.org. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give, do not mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, and they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Hungry Planet. The Hungry Planet. It's written by Peter Menzel and Faith DeLuzio, spelled D apostrophe A-L-U-I-S-I-O. Peter Menzel, M-E-N-Z-E-L. Hungry Planet. Here's where you go to pick this up. Try Brave New Bookstore. BraveNewBookstore.com be their webpage. And I think you can probably get a copy from them. If you can't, or if you don't, then just go to your regular bookstore. It's practically brand new, on the shelves here. I'll see if I find a date for you here. Well, I don't see the date on here. Can't even find the date page. Nope, no date page that I can see, unless it's in the back of the book. There's two more books I'm going to give you a lead on. The other one is called Genetic Roulette. Now, this Genetic Roulette you can get from Brave New Bookstore. They carry it. And the other one is Seeds of Deception by Jeffrey M. Smith. And as we progress along, I'm going to give you a further report on genetically engineered seed, GM seed. And that's Jeffrey M. Smith, and it's called Genetic Roulette, The Documented Health Risks of Genetically Engineered Foods. Genetically Engineered Foods. He wrote two books. Genetic Roulette is one, Seeds of Deception is the other. Both of those books are dynamite. Now, Brave New Bookstore also has a phone. Got your pen and paper out there. I'm going to give you the number here. It's 512-480-2503. Again, that's Brave New Bookstore, area code 512-480-2503. And if you're online, they're online, bravenewbookstore.com. And they're located in Austin, Texas, 1904 Guadalupe Street, Suite B, Austin, Texas, 78705. All right, I'm going to circle off the Australia Outback up here. I've covered that one. Now, conversely, let me find one over here that's fairly, here we go, post-warfare now. What do we got here? Here we go, refugees in Chad. Here's a refugee family in Chad. They're called the, I don't know if I can pronounce their names, the Abu Bakers, A-B-O-U-B-A-K-A-R-S, of the Breedjing Camp. These are refugees. And there's a picture of them. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of them in the family. You've got a young man here. He looks like he's 16 years old. You've got 1, 2, 3, 4 children ranging from maybe 2 years to 16 years. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 children. We've got a mother. I suppose it's the mother. They're from Darfur province in Sudan in front of their tent in the Breedjing refugee camp in eastern Chad with a week's worth of food. And the woman is 40. She holds her daughter, Hawa, 2. The other children are left to right. Acha, 12. Maryam, 5. Yusef, 8. Abdel Karim, 16. Cooking method is wood fire. Food preservation, natural drying. Favorite food, the Jamaica soup and fresh sheep meat. And sitting in front of them is 1, 2, 3 sacks, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 looks like little plastic bags, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 looks like limes. There's one bottle of water. It may be tea, it may be something else. And then the three sacks for the 1 week. Looks like a sack of corn, a sack of some kind of flour, and a sack of peas. And then over on their side over here, they've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, looks like 5 or 6 gallon plastic containers, and I presume that that's plastic containers of water. They live in a tent. And they're refugees, and they're being fed for 19 cents per person per meal. Total cost of their food, $24.37 per week. Chad refugees, 6 in number, $4.06 per person per day. Excuse me, $4.06 per person per week. $4.06 per person per week. That works out to 19 cents per meal, or 57 cents a day to feed one person. I think that's remarkable. They're being fed by an aid program. These people are not starving. They don't have bloated stomachs. They're in a refugee camp. They're all dressed fairly well, modestly, but they're all dressed well. And they're not fat. None of them are fat, but none of them are skinny. They're all full-fleshed, and they look good. That's the point that they're making here. We're not trying to scare you to death, you know, with starvation or famine. These people have plenty to eat. But here's the lesson to be learned. These people are eating on 19 cents a meal, $4.06 per person per week, $24.37. Now, when we look at what are they eating, they're eating grains and other starchy foods. The sorghum ration, unmilled, 39.3 pounds. Corn-soy blend ration, 4.6 pounds. Dairy, not available to them. Meat, fish, and eggs, 58 cents. Goat meat, dried and on the bone, 9 ounces. Dried fish, 7 ounces. Note, periodically, such as at the end of Ramadan, several families collectively purchase a live animal to slaughter and share. Some of its meat is eaten fresh in soup and the rest is dried. They have 51 cents worth of fruits, vegetables, and nuts. Limes, small, 5. Pulses, ration, 4.6 pounds. The seeds of legumes, rich, such as peas, beans, lentils, chickpeas, and fava beans. Red onions, 1 pound. Garlic, 8 ounces. Okra, dried, 5 ounces. Red peppers, dried, 5 ounces. Tomatoes, dried, 5 ounces. Condiments, 13 cents. Sunflower oil ration, 2.1 quarts. White sugar ration, 1.4 pounds. Dried peppers, 12 ounces. Salt ration, 7.4 ounces. Ginger, 4 ounces. Beverages, water, 77.7 gallons, provided by Oxfam and includes water for all purposes. That's what those 5-gallon containers are, 77 gallons of water. The rations are organized by the United Nations with the World Food Program. The food expenditure for 1 week is 685 CFA francs. So that totals $1.23. Market value of the food rations, if purchased locally, would be $24.37. Now, all of this food that they have in front of them has been brought in, more than likely. It's hauled in from the United States or from some aid organization. But if they went out into the marketplace and bought that same amount of food, they would pay in U.S. dollars $24.37. Now, that's a refugee group, 19 cents. Now, I thought that was amazing. This is in Chad. Chad is in the Sahel. It's south of Libya. They are dirt poor. It's a desert country. And these people now, remember, are refugees from the Sudan. Well, what about the average Joe Sixpack who is a citizen of the nation of Chad? Well, he's the next story. And he's a Chad farmer. The Chad farmer. See if I can find him here. Water at the Wadi. Yeah, here we go. This guy, Chad, the Mustafas of Dar es Salaam village. The guy's name is spelled Mustaphas. He's a farmer. And he has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 people to feed. The Chad farmer. Sitting in front of them are bowls of food. I mean, they're big bowls. They probably hold 5 gallons each. They've got a big watermelon, and they've got 1, 2, 3, 4 little watermelons. They have what looks like to me to be a goat killed and sitting there. If it isn't a goat, it may be that, I'll tell you what it is. It's on a goat skin, but it's 1, 2, 3. It looks like 3 chickens. That's what that is. Yeah, it's 3 chickens. Now, I can't describe everything that's sitting in front of them. All of them are full-fleshed. None of them are skinny. They're all dressed well. They live in a thatched hut. It's got a thatch roof. It's got mud walls. They've got skins down on the dirt. There's a carpet that the three of the children are laying on. And then five people are kneeling down on a long blanket that looks like it's about, I don't know, looks like you roll it up and roll it out. All right, now these people are from Chad. Now listen to what these people eat. They spend $25.44. Now, they don't spend that much, but that's how much they grow themselves. And if they went out into the marketplace, that's what they would be spending. They feed 9 people. It costs $2.82 a week per person. They're all black. So these are black people. They look like they're Negroes. They don't look like they're Arabs. And the same thing was true from the Chad refugees. Now, I don't know if the people of Chad are Arabs or if they're black Africans, but these people are black Africans. Chad used to be administered by France. It was a protectorate or a colony of France. All right, this Chad farmer then over here is spending 13 cents per person to feed his family per meal. 13 cents per meal. Here's what they're eating. Grains and other starchy foods, millet. Approximately 2.1 quarts, millet flour, I don't know what a koro is, but whatever a koro is. Dairy milk, 7 koros from the family cows. So whether a koro is a gallon or if it's a quart, I can't tell you. They've got meat, fish, and eggs, $2.16. Chickens, 8.8 pounds meat. After cleaning, goat meat dried on the bone, 6.6 pounds. So they've got goat meat here somewhere. And I think it's in one of these pots. Fruits, vegetables, and nuts, $7.19. They got watermelons, 22 pounds. Harar squash, 17.6 pounds. Dates, 1 koro, whatever that is. Okra, dried, 1 koro. Red onions, 1 koro. Garlic, 0.5 koros. Tomatoes, dried and milled, 1/2 koro. Red peppers, dried and milled, 0.3 koros. Peanuts, 3 koros. Condiments, $8.54. Peanut oil, 1.1 gallon. Sugar, 1/2 koro. Salt, 1/2 koro. I wonder if a koro is a pound or something like that. Beverages, 44 cents. They got tea, 3.5 ounces, water, hand or animal carried 1/2 mile from the wadi for both drinking and cooking. Now, most of their food is homegrown. Food expenditure for 1 week is 10,200 CFA francs. African, it's $18.33. Market value of homegrown foods, if purchased locally, would be $25.44. So, we're looking at a typical Chad family here that eats for just about the same amount of money as a Chad refugee. The difference being that these people have some land and they grow their own food, or most of it. I imagine they didn't say what they do for a living here. Now, there's a story that goes along with this. And it tells you the story, and more than likely it would tell us what this guy does for a living and how he lives his life and one thing and another. I haven't read all the stories here. But the point is that they're surrounded by livestock. Amnon's father and his family eat red meat infrequently. When they do eat it, they rarely slaughter an animal from their own herd because that would deplete their assets. Instead, they split the cost of an animal with several families and butcher it for feasts, like the celebration at the end of Ramadan, when the family has meat. So they don't eat meat too often, but they eat a lot of fruits, vegetables, squash, chickens. I've got three chickens here. This is 1 week. A lot of dates, a lot of fruit. And here's the point. They're doing it on 13 cents a day, 5 cents cheaper than the aid programs. So if you think that the aid programs are a starvation diet, and these people, you know, are starving to death, and they've got flies crawling all over them, that's not the case. That's a fiction. This is just a normal, ordinary family living in Chad, and they live in a thatched house. We would think that they're poor as church mice, but the moral to the story is that these people are living their lives, eating three times a day, have plenty of food here. They've got all the food that they eat in a week sitting out in front of them with a family portrait. Now, that's what's unique about this book. Ordinarily, in all of my life, I have never sat in front of 1 week's worth of food for my family and diagrammed it out to see, well, you know, how much peanut oil do we eat in a week, or how much, or how many dates do we eat, or dried fruit, or how many cookies do I eat? I think it would be pretty revelatory if I did, but these people did, and that's what the book is all about. Let me give you the title and the vital statistics. It's called Hungry Planet. This is about a 1 in 20 book. Lots of books out there that deal with diet. Lots of books out there that deal with food and starvation and one thing and another, genetically modified foods and so on. And that's not a unique subject. But this is a very unique book. And in all the years that I've been in the business here, copyright 2005, by Peter Menzel. It's on the back page here. And Faith D'Aluzio, 2005. Put out by 10 Speed Press, Berkeley, California. Let's see, we got www.10speed.com. We got this from Barnes & Noble. So if you'll go to Barnes & Noble, I think you can get it. Again, it's Hungry Planet, Peter Menzel, and Faith D'Aluzio, 2005 is the copyright. Two other books here that you should get at the same time. Genetic Roulette, The Documented Health Risks of Genetically Engineered Foods, Jeffrey M. Smith. The other one, Seeds of Deception, Jeffrey F. M. Smith. Those two books available from Brave New Bookstore. Phone number is 512-480-2503. Once more, that's 512-480-2503. BraveNewBookstore.com. Genetic Roulette and Seeds of Deception, Jeffrey Smith. Hey, I'm out of time. Well, I have to leave it right there and remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everyone, and good night, friends.